The Diary of a CTO podcast. Sharing the secrets of successful CTOs. Brought to you by Tremor, the home of technology recruitment. Hosted by Guy Bevington.
So chaps, here we are.
Hello.
Cheers. Chin chin.
Cheers.
Cheers, Art Wilnays. Cheers to cheers, cheers. So, we're going to start us off with a bit of a joke. What do you get if you cross chief technology officer, a chief data officer, and a recruitment consultant?
I don't know, Guy. What do you get?
I don't know either, but I guess we're going to find out.
This. Momentarily.
This is it, yeah. So, look, really pleased to be here today. We've obviously all been flirting with the idea of doing a podcast for a while together now, so it's great that we've actually made it happen. And can I just say, speaking from the heart, there are no two finer people than I would love to have in a room and shut their ideas down in flames.
Thank you. Take that, guys, other podcast guests.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, all gags aside, we're obviously all pretty good mates, which I think is always nice place to be. And I think it's fair to say we've got a lot in common, but also given our different roles, hopefully bring a bit of a unique perspective to some of the issues that we're all facing in the world of tech today. And so hopefully should make for a semi-entertaining, dare I say, even educational podcast. So we'll see how we get on. But today, gents, in our inaugural voyage, we're going to take on the biggie, AI. Okay? So I'm just going to start, put a pretty big, I'm going to light this stick of dynamite and throw it in the middle, okay? Do what you want with it. But what does AI actually mean?
Well, it is a big question. I think, and we were speaking just before this as well about, I think it's quite important to try and sort of demystify or disambiguate or try and get a bit of a handle on what AI means and what it means to different people. Because I think particularly, you know, in the last sort of 12 to 18 months, it's become very much part of the sort of zeitgeist, or everyone kind of has heard of it at least and has, you know, I think, some sort of understanding of what it means.
I know that much, so. So it must be on everyone's radar.
Exactly. But I think there's are, you know, without question, sort of different areas to it. And I think that's quite important to try and almost compartmentalize the different areas so we can, you know, talk about things in different ways, or, you know, not sort of be sort of ambiguous. And as we were sort of talking about earlier, I think there's kind of AI as a tool that will kind of help kind of existing kind of workflows and existing ways of working and kind of make people more efficient, more productive. You can certainly see lots of things, you know, people using, say, ChatGPT to help, I don't know, kind of write a presentation or do some research, or just kind of help get some ideas kind of running, and then they'll take that themselves. You know, it's still the human operator, it's still the person is kind of using that tool to make themselves more efficient or better, or kind of just, you know, kind of augmenting, if you will, the existing way of working. So that's one area, and there's obviously a huge amount in there, and yeah, there's a massive amount of depth there, and I think that's the kind of thing that's on kind of the accessibility that's certainly come in the last sort of 12 months or so, where people can just go to a website and use these things, and it kind of seems like witchcraft almost at times, because it's so accessible. And I think that's the sort of the layer of LLMs has kind of made a lot of that possible, because it is almost conversational, that the way people can use it now.
Yeah.
Then there's always like the next area, which is it's kind of almost products that could be augmented, or different ways of working. Like, ultimately, you know, you are a data product, or you have some workflow that you can kind of see, well, actually, if we use AI, we can actually change it. We can cut out entire steps, or we can kind of reorganize the way in which people work, or change, almost kind of change the kind of the world around you through kind of AI technologies. And I think that applies to a smaller subset of companies, but in probably in a large part, the people in that area are people who've been working with the fundamental AI technologies, be it natural language processing, machine learning, and other bits and pieces, probably for, you know, 5, 10, maybe even 15, 20 years, because a lot of these kind of underlying concepts have been around for a very long time. So this is, LLMs in that sense, if we're kind of using that as one of the main things that has kind of really caught the imagination recently, is that is you sort of just building on top of kind of what's gone before it in a great way, but you will then create new products and new ways of working. And that's, I think, there's probably more unknowns in that area, and ultimately you get kind of going through that all the way through to the terror around, kind of robots with lasers firing out of their eyes, kind of taking over the world and that sort of stuff, because there is just, lots of different ways it could go ultimately. But I think we're quite some way off, there being kind of real impact to that, but that'll kind of, clear in due course.
Sure, we'll get into that. Yeah, I agree. It definitely feels like for the first time, AI is being adopted now as a label that it's so subjective, but also quite, understood globally as well at the same time. Prior to doing the podcast, actually, I thought it'd be quite interesting to feed into ChatGPT what is AI. Do you want to hear the definition? So AI, it refers to the development of computer systems that can perform tasks that typically require human intelligence. The goal of AI is to create systems that can mimic, augment, and surpass human intelligence in various domains. P.S. I'm going to kill you.
So in for your first question, what is AI? Obviously, we all know it in the current context. But from my background, it is that mimicking of decision-making, how humans make decisions. And it's so relevant in the current world, but it's not talked about because it's not that relevant to the end user. But actually, in answer to the question, what do I see as AI? It is a kind of almost the scientific underpinning or the engineering underpinning of the decision-making process. Because that is fundamentally what we're doing. We're taking out decisions from ourselves and putting them on a process.
Yeah.
So for me, that's it. Mm-hmm. It's moving the burden of decision making from the human to the insert product here.
Yeah. And it's not just the burden. It's also if you build a thing, if you code it up, if you have testing around it, or whatever it might be, you can refine it. So you have a sort of almost a static way of thinking of the world, or a static, but it's a defined thing that you can, as you add more data or you tweak its kind of decision-making processes, then you've sort of got this collective kind of knowledge almost kind of bound up in a single thing to be reused. So, particularly in the case of, self-driving cars, it's every crash, every experience, every near miss, every different type of road sign, whatever it is all that knowledge, that understanding, that way of processing the kind of the input, be it the visual or the LiDAR or whatever it might be, it's kind of learning and it's kind of going into the central thing. It's almost I'm not a Trekkie, but I'm aware of the concept of the Borg and this sort of collective.
You're not tricky. That does surprise me. No, Star Wars, you like that.
Can we eject Alex from the podcast right now?
In fairness, I'm more of a Star Wars and Star Trek.
100%. Okay, I'm leaving.
Yeah, get out. Go on.
I oversold it. So I think that's very important as well, because it's the difference between traditional, tree diagram, context-driven logic and being able to switch context. So your self-driving example, the world is changing around it all the time. It's, we can't engineer the environment anymore. It's a non-environment specific usage of these decision-making technologies too.
There's an interesting word in that description though, where it said, I forget the bits before it, but it said surpassing.
Yeah, I figured that up as well. I was like, hang on a minute, just slipping that one in there. Trying to mimic anymore, I want to... Yeah, one better year.
Sort of setting a stall out maybe a little bit there.
Yeah.
Kind of going, watch out, I'm coming for you guys.
That's why I always say please and thank you, ChatGPT.
I do as well.
Just in future. Just
in case. Good practice. He's got a list.
Who knows? Cool. So you mentioned there a bit about autonomous driving vehicles and that kind of thing. And I suppose that begs the question of where I think a lot of people look at AI from a kind of a fear-based perspective about how it's going to replace humanity and ultimately, I guess, jobs at the same time. So we're obviously all in the world of tech day in, day out, and sort of see the different roles that are being created within technology and all that kind of thing. But how do you see the rise of Gen AI impacting on the world of work in terms of people's job prospects for the current workforce, but also future employees. How do you see that whole thing panning out?
Absolutely no impact at all.
No? Okay. I'm podcast labour, right? Okay. I believe.
Well, no, it's so big, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is where to start. I think you had some points earlier, Alex.
Yeah, no, I think, and it sort of goes back to that definition of trying to kind of disambiguate and kind of say, well, there's different areas of AI. I think back to those areas I mentioned near the start, it's that augmenting, improving, making people better at what they do. I think that's one area, and I think that's certainly where recent LLMs, ChatGPT, Copilot, all these things, I think that's where there's been this kind of just quite kind of significant leap forward, because it is very accessible. And I think that is one of the real benefits of LLMs. There's great intelligence and machines and computers and everything else, but the LLMs mean you don't need to have a preset interface. It's not like old product management where you go, we need to anticipate every single use case, every single interaction, think about what the edge case is, what might people do we don't expect, all that sort of stuff. It's now approaching, obviously it's not there yet, but it's approaching this much more sort of, you can just talk to it, you can ask questions and it will respond, and you can refine it and remembers what you've said and what you said, not necessarily what someone else has said, and it can, it's that kind of evolving. So I think
barriers to entry, isn't it?
It really lowers the barrier entry to this kind of huge kind of wealth of data and intelligence and everything else. So in that regard, I think that is something that is really kind of gaining momentum, and I think every day people's jobs will be changing. I think probably slowly initially, and then as things mature and it becomes more embedded, some people's jobs won't be needed anymore. If you're working, in a role that was traditionally done kind of, by people, the example of preparing presentations in a corporate organization, for instance, there used to be, and there still are kind of entire departments that are there creating slide decks and refining it and doing all this stuff and
doing
kind of lots of research and coming up with copy and everything else. And you can, it's not really difficult to foresee many of those roles not being there, at least in the sort of the depth, like a lot of the sort of the legwork.
Yeah.
Those people, have a great depth of knowledge around what makes good copy, so they can be, they're the sort of the editors of the...
I think the roles are going to change. And I think where people are really scared is they're thinking, I'm not a tech person, what's going to happen to me? But actually, when I look at it, for those roles, I think it's moving from roles to skills, capabilities. I mean, we're going that way corporately anyway. And then when we look at it, someone who's in marketing or someone who's in risk management, they are very reliant often currently on some of the data people in their organization. I actually see the mid-level data jobs as the ones which are going to suffer from AI, not as much. And there's going to possibly be productivity and other growth in these jobs where you can't on the face of it, if you're doing that job, think, oh my God, it's coming for my job. It may not be. It may be it may be changing the way we're working in companies to the extent that data teams are not going to be needed in the same way in big companies, but we're going to need more data-enabled people. And I think, as long as people are upskilling on how to utilize these new technologies, and it's terrifying how fast they're coming through as well. I mean, it's literally my job to keep on top of it, and I'm overwhelmed by how much is coming in.
Evolving thick and fast. Alex, just a quick one. Have you noticed how Ant's got a really nice podcast voice?
Yeah, this is beautiful.
It's like turned into a really nice bedtime storytelling mate. I don't know what it is.
Sorry, guys. Should I go back to my normal voice?
Yeah, that's much better.
Okay.
Observation. But no, I totally agree. I don't know if you saw there's a study, the World Economic Forum basically said by 2025, they reckon there's going to be 85 million jobs lost through automation, but 97 million created off the back of it, which I guess, is the point that we're making, that it's not the end of humanity and obviously, the need for jobs. But
shall we not comment on the extrapolation factors in that?
Please do.
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, at the end of the day, any statistic can sound official, can't it, if it comes from the World Economic Forum?
For our audio only listeners, I was licking my finger and putting my finger in the air.
Yeah. Well, as long as it went in the air. But no, I mean, obviously there's lots of stats out there, but I guess I can see the logic, even just where we are now, that like you said, all the way along, technology's there to augment, yeah, technology there by and large. And I guess this is where the conversation comes from an ethical standpoint about, you know, what is AI in terms of when it gets to a point of sentience. But generally speaking, to this point, it's been about serving humanity and making our lives easier, making our jobs easier. But it feels like, obviously, for the first time, like I say, this level of inherent logic now that we all have access to a lot of people, perceived as a threat because it can genuinely replace rather than enhance.
Yeah. I mean, it is, but I guess my initial thought is, yeah, that sort of pace of change. I think we're seeing lots of, like, huge leaps forward in terms of what's available, but the rate of adoption in lots of organisations will not be overnight. Yeah, it takes time for these things to embed. So in terms of, yeah, I've not seen that report on the jobs, but is it that jobs that would have been created would no longer be there? So people who are currently doing whatever these jobs are, yeah, they will still have a job for the remainder of their career. It's just that, yeah, there's less likely to be replaced by someone at a more junior level, because actually that more junior level is now something that can be done, by AI or by kind of more automation.
That's what I meant by the nature of the roles changing. I think often they are consolidating, as new roles are popping up as well, but the roles are, the responsibilities of different roles are reducing. It doesn't mean all the roles, it doesn't mean the people are all disappearing.
Yeah.
No. But that's the case it's always been. We spoke earlier, Industrial Revolution, yeah, it happened over a long period of time. This is going to happen faster, but it's not happening.
Yeah, not overnight. And even just an example popped into my brain around, yeah, if you go back to the sort of post-war 50s, 60s, yeah, you had kind of typing pools in offices. So there's entire kind of floors full of people who are, writing up memos, sending letters, doing all these things that now with the internet, with, laptops and PCs and everything else, that's most people write their own emails. Most people can talk and communicate without the need of having a dedicated pool of people in an organization to do it for them. So that's something that, has evolved over time. And I don't have direct experience, but I don't think there was this huge overnight kind of raft of people suddenly made redundant. It was over time, the working practice changed and evolved, and people were leaving, they weren't getting replaced, rather than all of a sudden it's, kind of 10% of a workforce is kind of losing their job just because there's a new system comes in. I think these things do take time, because ultimately for a lot of these jobs to be made redundant, it requires a pretty significant change in people's behavior, which is not something that generally, does not change overnight. People.
Do you think it's slightly different? I totally agree with you. This is definitely like an age-old paradigm of technology. Obviously, evolution in technology has, as time gone on, replaced a need to do certain things manually, definitely. But I think, I suppose if you look at how our business and commerce is structured, it's obviously been a very slow kind of sequential logical progression. And then obviously the internet, kind of came around in the 80s, and that totally changed things to a degree where, prior to this, people were paid for their knowledge and their expertise, and then the internet came along, and then obviously the dissemination of knowledge was, the world became a lot more interconnected place, and information wasn't quite as important, and it became more about developing other skills, like softer skills and people skills and that kind of thing. But then it kind of feels like within the last 2-3 years, it's the same paradigm that's playing out again, but just on a much kind of more rapid scale, completely, than it's ever happened before. And that's the bit I think that unsettles people a little bit. I agree with you, we're not going to change overnight, and obviously, but I think a lot of people are going to ChatGPT or other LLMs are available and going, hang on a minute, this can actually do.
I should plug Marvin at this point. If you're in project delivery,
please do.
Yeah, you want to check us out.
Okay, nice. But yeah, I think in recruitment, and I think recruitment is one of those jobs that it does require a lot of actual people skills, being human, empathy, persuasion, all that kind of stuff that you hope, thankfully, for a while, we can't see a robot doing. But even, I'm thinking that is a risk. There's so many people that are doing a job that maybe doesn't require as much of that, must be looking and thinking, Jesus Christ, this is a concern.
But even in that use case, ultimately, you have to spend, CVs and LinkedIn profiles are a terrible way of understanding someone's professional experience, but that's just how we do it.
Amen. Well, is it though?
Well, it's the sort of the best thing we have at the moment. It's not inconceivable.
No, what?
That's why you need recruiters, because then they can actually, you know, talk to someone, really understand it. Yeah, you know, but it's not inconceivable to think, well, you could have a, you know, a kind of recruitment bot that understands how to really kind of dig into someone's profile and have a, you know, have a conversation with them that builds up a more, you know, nuanced, you know, a deeper understanding of someone's career, their skills, their experience that is then translatable to a potential employer, because then they can say to the bot, right, I need someone who's done X, Y, Z, or even this is the problem. Can you find me people that haven't solved the problem? So needing someone to explicitly say, I need someone with these skills.
Yeah.
It's, you kind of get to that place, but ultimately in that, that will, yeah, that will take time. It will still need, you know, professionals to help build the thing and kind of use the tool and use it better. So again, yeah, I guess going back to my sort of same example, it might be that, let's say the next sort of 2-3 years, that sort of technology becomes available. It will be that you and your current people in your team will all then be much more productive.
Yeah, exactly.
And
totally.
You'll stop.
It's a blast of authenticity, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I totally agree with that. I look at it insofar as there's so many tools, and there are already so many AI tools out there, which, you know, again, what is AI? But that genuinely save us a lot of time now. Things that I did 15 years ago.
Can I link that back to what you said about information changing? Yeah. So you said about the internet. You said about the internet coming and the pace of what people could acquire knowledge, and now we have the language learning models, etc. You can, you know, interrogate. You can find out a lot of information. There's still limitations. We still need the human. Now the learning cycle, what we learn, may change. Example: the number of local LLMs, locally deployed LLMs, released in the last fortnight. It's a very new thing. If you go and ask ChatGPT about LLMs and it surfaces information for you when you do your research there, you will be quoting wholly incorrect, complete opposite of current. You'd be correct in 2022,
yeah,
but you wouldn't be now.
God, it loves telling you that, doesn't it? Oh, sorry, I'm only trained up to 2023. Lazy.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Expensive. You know, we think education's expensive. Imagine if you're ChatGPT, you're like, oh my God, I need to do some on-the-job training.
Did you hear about that?
How many millions is that?
Yeah, that lawyer in America that just basically used ChatGPT to like cite all of his cases and then went into the courtroom and they were all made up, like totally hallucinated all of them. I mean, it's not a really funny story, but it's not quite funny. Well, it's to your point though, isn't it, about there will need to be always, I think, hopefully, an end point where humans evaluate the output from these LLMs.
I've got a funny story about that kind of stuff with hallucinations. It's not so much hallucinations, but a...
this about tech or...?
Yes, it's the same thing, yeah.
It's about the weekend in Cancun.
No, so...
Somebody
I know who's a doctor, they were trialing some LLM-type diagnostic tech with an AI behind it, and AI was making decisions. And so I'd given it the parameters, and it had to make recommendations of treatment. And after a bit of training and on the job work, Alex may remember this because he knows it from what I told him 2 years ago. It's it basically, whatever they put into the system, you know, patients in, these are the symptoms. Let's say the patient has a cold. The AI LLM recommends euthanasia. Because one of its founding principal goals was to minimize pain.
Wow.
And it worked out at some point that dead people don't feel pain.
This has got a point, Ben.
And it was terrifying. So when we're thinking of, you know, again, it's the emphasis on most people and how it affects them, it's learning how to use the technology, upskilling yourselves. It's not necessarily, there's a niche of people who are developing it. And if you're one of them, great. But, you know, using it for the everyday, in your everyday lives, understanding how it affects you, I think that's where, you know, don't just... Please, I hope there's no doctor out there who's like, oh, my ChatGPT tells me I have to do euthanasia on this pregnant woman because childbirth is painful. No.
You both. On that note of how we go about building tools and applications now, obviously ChatGPT has definitely come along and just disrupted the apple cart, you know, for a lot of people. You know, a lot of AI startup companies that 2-3 years before were building apps that, you know, very specific in a particular field, and ChatGPT came along and basically all but wiped out their business in one foul swoop. Where do you feel now the future of tech lies, insofar as, you know, OpenAI is not going anywhere, Microsoft's behind it now, it's going to keep gathering momentum, there's not many things out there that can probably cut muster with it. So how do we embrace it, and what types of applications should we be building to, I guess, complement what is available with a lot of these LLMs? And yeah, how do you kind of see the world of, you know, tech keeping up with the types of apps that should be available?
I can answer from, and speak more about the kind of the underlying tech, but I guess more from a sort of strategic point of view.
Yeah.
Again, it's not necessarily anything new in terms of new technology. What are the opportunities? What are the threats? What are the risks of kind of using it? It hasn't removed any of those considerations. I think if you are planning to sort of build something that is trying to get around the problem, you've got a chatbot or something in that kind of space, you go, well, it can do 80% of what we need, but it's not kind of talking in the right way, or it's not accessing this thing in the right way, whatever it might be. So we're going to spend, you know, 100K, a few million to sort of build and kind of wrap around it, so we can kind of have a product that's based on this underlying thing. And then we're going to kind of, you know, solve some of the problems it hasn't fixed yet. I think particularly with the pace of change at the moment, you have to be really kind of really thoughtful around, is that really worth it? You know, by the time you've built this thing, are the people who are building ChatGPT or Gemini or any of the other ones out there, or other products that do similar things, are they going to catch you up? In your example, ultimately, are they going to kind of eat your lunch? Because they are developing at a huge pace of change. I imagine that what we're seeing now is what was built sort of 3 or 4 years ago from kind of an internal kind of point of view.
Yeah.
And as they're gaining momentum, getting more investment and getting more adoption, you know, that's only going to accelerate. I think it will certainly start leveling off at some point. I don't have a crystal ball to know when that point is. I think it will reach a sort of a bit of a plateau in terms of maturity. You know, again, you look back to history around technology, even in the last sort of 20, 30 years, with smartphones, with the internet, with websites, with apps, with, you know, lots of things like this, where there was a huge rush and lots of things changed very quickly. And ultimately, there is that sort of maturity cycle where it kind of starts bedding in, you start having a bit more predictability.
So how would you get ready for this next phase? If you were CTO of a company, what are you doing right now to make sure you're ready for when this stabilizes?
Well, I think, to the first question as well, I think you go back to sort of base principles to a degree, and it's about having a good tech strategy, a good data strategy. It's about, you know, with all the, you know, with anything data related, it's kind of rubbish in, rubbish out. Like, ultimately, if you don't have a good data strategy, good data governance,
great data officer,
exactly, to kind of understand what your assets are, and you kind of disseminate that knowledge across the whole organization. It's not just, and I think it's a point you made earlier around kind of upskilling everyone in these kind of skills and disciplines.
It's gone broader than the tech people now. It's the whole company.
Yeah,
it's a one company approach. It's, I mean, depends on your company, but it's getting close to that for almost every company, right?
I think it needs to, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not a company, like a serious company in this day and age, if you're not at least trying to embrace data, machine learning, AI in some way,
shape,
and form.
Totally. I mean, my career has been in kind of data companies, you know, back sort of 20, 25 years, but I think now it's at a point where every company is a data company. I think everyone has to have a data strategy, or even if it's not this kind of huge kind of business plan that has kind of data at the heart of it, it's around what data you have, how do you look after that data? Because that's another thing within the kind of realm of data governance, data strategy, is, you know, data security, what data you're collecting, or what potential confidential or sensitive information do you have? Are you treating it, you know, with the right kind of due care and respect? If you've got people taking lots of personal information and feeding that into ChatGPT, then obviously that's a very bad thing to do. And having people having that knowledge that these are great new tools you're using, and not try and kind of, you know, chop their arms off and say you can't use any of them, but having that kind of that knowledge and awareness of what limitations are and what the potential pitfalls are as well.
Do you think this is taken care of just with the standard, like, Cyber Essentials related training and ISO 27001 stuff?
I think it's the same principle. But, you know, they need to be updated or augmented with, you know, kind of basically, with all these things, they are kind of updated when new technology comes along and new approaches. And I think there is it a kind of a next level of that? And I think when you look at, yeah, the two you just sort of quoted there, it's Cyber Essentials and ISO 27001, they are coming at it from a very much of a risk point of view. You know, it's kind of, well, how do we protect things? How do we stop mistakes? How do we kind of identify potential issues, that kind of thing, which I think is really important. And I think, yeah, that's the kind of the bedrock. But then there is another kind of flip to it, is like, what are the opportunities? How can you use these tools? How can you kind of augment your workflows? And that will become a role. I think it'll become almost a thing, at least for a while, where you've got, going back 15, 20 years, you had things like head of digital and kind of people going, well, how can we use the internet and how can we use kind of websites? So, yeah, really kind of basic stuff like that, you know, weren't necessarily a distinct department. You still had your tech function and your marketing function and your product and everything else, but they were there to sort of always help, kind of generate ideas and, you know, kind of disseminate knowledge. And again, you know, with apps and kind of, you had this sort of more of a kind of a, you know, chief transformation officer, stuff like that, as much more, you know, components. Yeah, you think about the kind of how cloud computing changed kind of product development over the last sort of 10 years or so. There's things you can do now, or even, you know, even pre kind of OpenAI and everything, you know, going back a couple of years, there's things you can, products you can build easily by going to a browser, going to AWS, going to Azure, you know, whatever your platform of choice is, and you can spin up, you know, really powerful databases and APIs and integration platforms and all this different stuff that, you know, even 5 years before that, wasn't possible.
Well, December 2011 basically was the crux change there. Before December 2011, you had to have all that infrastructure, some supercomputer, everything. It was a huge undertaking. I mean, that's where this podcast started, really, isn't it? December 2011, that technology allowing the cloud distribution, it allowed all of this AI fourth industrial revolution to really kick off.
I think getting to your point there about the security standards, that's obviously really interesting. You know, the whole AI security, but also AI ethics piece. And obviously you talk about 27001, but at the end of the day, that's quite an outdated, you know, piece of legislation, I guess, or whatever it is, a framework. And the speed of which, you know, these tools are actually evolving, that those kind of security governance parameters and the standards that need to be in place around that, that's just going to be kind of a ever-evolving landscape as well, isn't it? I think that's going to be quite interesting.
Look at the absolute bullshit. Can I say bullshit? Yes, because it's fine.
Of course you can.
Look at the absolute bullshit. The algorithmic transparency standard the government, the UK government released in November 2021.
Yeah.
It's not a standard. I think they just tried to beat the EU or something because they knew the EU had a standard coming out. So when we're giving top-down guidance to companies and it's that...
Mm.
Oh God! Yeah,
I think there are two related but different things in what we just mentioned there. So there's ethics and there's sort of good governance and good standards. So I think there's a sort of the bottom up, building on top of Cyber Essentials and ISO 27001 and whatever else is out there at the moment, and you know, they haven't changed. All the principles in there are, yeah, they're all still sound, and it's all about having, you know, knowledge of your assets and good cataloging.
Risk. Did I say it's risk? Isn't it?
It's risk, yeah. And yeah, who's got access to these things? And ultimately, you know, you kind of need to adapt those and kind of make sure that, you know, they're still applicable and still kind of accessible. I think that's one of the areas where they'll be talking about a world, yeah, still where people talk about infrastructure and what infrastructure I've deployed. And even now with cloud, it's kind of, well, does it really work? Because actually I've just got an Azure database and an app server on AWS. Like what do I really have deployed and where does it sit? Do I have control? So that's already kind of a thing. But then there's the ethics, which is obviously related, but actually coming at it from quite a different angle. And I think there's a lot of, probably quite right, yeah, a lot of concern about its usage. And I think that's maybe the different way to frame it. It's not what you're building per se, but how it's used. And I think, yeah, with the ethics, I think that's where it does come in. And I think, again, I guess nothing has fundamentally changed. It's just a lot easier to do things you shouldn't be doing. And I guess that's where there's quite a lot of friction around the kind of the speed and pace of change. And
I do think, to that point, though, like I said, speed and pace, I do think that's going to happen. I think, yeah, we're obviously a million miles away, hopefully, from Skynet and all of the kind of doom and gloom, doomsday prophecy stuff. But I think at some point, somebody's already set the wheels in motion now, thinking how they can...
Sorry, guys, you've picked your side.
Yeah.
You've got more spine than I ever knew. Yeah. Picking the side of the losers.
I'm saying it's going to take something like that to happen to then start to really like hone in on this AI ethics thing, because it's, you know, it's like what came first, the criminal or the police force, right? And it's like the same kind of thing. I think that's going
to. Well, we know the answer to that one, though.
Robert Peel.
Maybe the criminal.
Is it though?
Yes.
Yeah, it probably is. Yes.
Yeah, but that's my point. You're verifying what I'm saying. I think at some point, you know, even though we're really miles away from some kind of sentient being taking over the world, I think there are going to be some massive cyber crimes committed soon.
I mean, they'll be happening today. Like, yeah, everywhere exactly. In the world. Yeah,
but I'm talking like, I reckon on a global scale, at some point someone's going to work it out, and then it's going to start to really tighten up what we need to consider around the ethics side of AI.
Have you seen some of the cool stuff they're doing with like trying to, the people who do the face app security, to try and use masks to try and break into?
What, like deepfake stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, but that scares the living bejesus out.
No, I'm not honestly talking about like, yeah, okay, obviously it's very valuable research, but what these researchers are doing is basically, PhDs in university labs, is basically finding just how bad you can get away with to really break through this technology, which should hopefully improve it. Mm. But it's also information out there for everybody. It's like you know, the old anarchist cookbook.
Yeah, but that's the sort of open source ethos around, yeah, you let the world see your source code, because then, yeah, the world can then comment on it and help improve it, rather than everything being closed off. And I think with AI, it's going to, as with all other tech, it's just that it's going to be not necessarily an arms race in a more broader sense, but AI will be used to combat the AI-based cyber threats.
And I suppose it's always interesting.
Yeah, kind of learning how it works and then kind of combating it. And then, yeah, maybe that's when all the lights turn off, because, like, ants...
Just leave them to it.
Yeah, exactly.
I still run some on-prem servers.
No.
Personally, yeah. There's good reasons for it.
For your shopping list.
Yeah, yeah.
What have you possibly got on there you don't want people to get access to?
I don't think we should go there.
So for the remainder of the podcast, we're going to talk about Ant. Cool. So I think we've covered a lot of good ground. Got a little bit of time left. So let's talk about the future insofar as what are you most excited about, I guess, in the world of AI? Again, huge question of, you know.
Lightweight local models.
Cool. Very, very, very specific answer there. Please elaborate.
Well, like, so much stuff is so good in all of the tech history, but then you need always computing power behind it. The main specific stuff that is just it, what you can do with that, I get very excited by. Whether that's the weight side is less important in terms of all these global models are great, but then there's privacy issues, security issues, you know, where they're going. So there've always been limitations. Now we're moving to a point where we're deploying local models where they're still feeding back and learning. We've moved, and this is only in the last few weeks, really. We're moving to the next phase. So I guess that's immediate future, not long-term future. Mm. But I think it's a really exciting immediate future.
But isn't that quite incredible that we're already talking about that now, and we think about the flash in the pan, like blink of time that we've had?
I would say, like, okay, things such as... what's one of the big problems of an LLM, right? When you're training it, you can't make it really forget what it's read selectively. The first paper which was released on that was last November, which was the Harry Potter. Can they make it basically the LLM, which has done a general ingestion, forget Harry Potter and different ways of doing it and the mathematical techniques there? That was in November. Now, in the normal cycle, we're at the next phase where we're getting the follow-up papers, which are a lot of guff. And then we're assuming one or two of those might be quite good, and then we're expecting some good stuff in like next September. The pace, like, you know, is so amazing on all that tech, but that's not what we're really excited about, because we know it's going there. For me, it's the usage, which is in the next deployable, in the next 1 to 5 years, in that future scope, is the local deployment models.
Mm.
And I think, and that will really help in so many ways and save the... Where we're sitting here in Britain, and presently all three of us are UK taxpayers, so it's going to save all of us an absolute fortune, literally.
Yeah, I'm only sort of counter that, and it's a little bit devil's advocate, but I do wonder with those kind of local deployed models or kind of very highly customized, that again, I think it's part of the sort of the cycle of these things kind of better than mature. It's not inconceivable to me that a lot of those will start, there'll be like a huge uptick, particularly with corporates, particularly people such as yourself who are dyed-in-the-wool data professionals. You've got really kind of deep access to really great, powerful tools and technology. But for mass market, like the cost and the effort and the headache of having...
They have to sit on top. They have to be underpinning LLM agnostic, which is difficult in the current market, but it's not impossible. It's being done.
Yeah, but I think for a lot of people, for a lot of organisations, it'll be, yeah, we can do this stuff ourselves, or we can just go and buy a product. We can buy a plugin to Salesforce that will do a whole bunch of...
I think that's a whole new industry.
It's a kind of, it will kind of sit on top of, rather than, because I think that, you know, again, that's what's happened in a really broad sense with kind of technology, with IT, with programming, with product development. You know, you go back, certainly 20 years, most companies were building stuff themselves from scratch. You know, you get a server, Colo, whatever it is, and you get your .NET framework or Java, and you're building stuff from a really low level. Now, people are using kind of cloud technologies, and there's no databases deployed locally, or you know, it's kind of this APIs, it all just kind of, so they're building blocks.
Are we going to a world where it's just individuals and all the MSPs you would ever need to do everything you ever need?
Well, I think...
I'm playing a bit facetious.
Yeah, of course. But I think,
yeah, I don't think you're far away, I think.
But it's that things get abstracted away. I think that's always a trend with technology, that as time goes on, the deeply complex, really knotty things, a few big players end up like solving it. And increasingly, which is maybe not a great thing, but increasingly that is Microsoft, Google, Amazon. They're kind of the Meta as well in there. But
companies that didn't exist in 1990.
Very true.
Right. Interesting. So on that spirit of, you know, what are the unexpected things in the future, although we didn't get to find out what Alex was excited about in the next 1 to 5 years or the long-term future. It's true. Although, let's find out first. I'm quite curious.
But I think it's, for me, it's really, yeah, again, I'll sort of keep going back to those sort of two sides. I think that on the communal people with, yeah, kind of day-to-day, kind of mass market, I think that adoption, I think, you know, what Microsoft is trying to do with the Office 365 Copilot thing, I think that's really neat. And I've certainly seen in a more specific domain with the original Copilot, if you will, a bit based on GitHub and kind of just programmers, like the productivity gains that people have. And even the tech before that, there's a bunch of plugins that, you know, did similar things. Yeah, as you're writing your code, it's kind of running the testing frameworks. It's kind of all the kind of the old stuff you used to have where people missing off semicolons and all that kind of nonsense. That's gone. That's kind of dead. And I think that kind of productivity use is like amazing. I think people will be able to do so much more with their day to day and all these little frustrations and all the things of like, why doesn't this just fucking do what I wanted to do? Like, why does it take me so long to write an email or so long to, I know exactly what I want to say and I know exactly the presentation I want to give. Yeah, yeah. Some good information.
Which is really why most people don't enjoy their jobs, isn't it? You think about like the bits that grind you down about your job.
It's all the bullshit.
It's bigger than that, right? All the bullshit. Think of all those genius mathematicians all those years who are, you know, you can teach a mathematician to code if they want to, but you can't teach a coder the maps. Mm-hmm. Right, all those mathematicians who didn't want to worry about input-output protocol in Java because it is a nightmare, and then they're already scarred before you get them onto Scala or something. You know, now those, you know, we're removing the mid layer, what the software engineering type layer from it. Are we about to open up a tap to a load of geniuses around the world?
Well, potentially, and I think that's the classic thing of talent is distributed evenly around the world, but opportunity isn't. And it's 100%. Another potential enabler, you know, great sort of social leveler that people who don't have access to a North American computer lab, that would have been the case in certainly most of the 20th century. If you didn't have access to those things, then you could have the best idea in the world and it's going nowhere because it's just an idea in your head that you can't.
And now they've got, I don't want to say anything about any particular company, but now, you know, I've gone Google.
Do you mind?
No. We're going to have to cut this out and go back again. I'll say
that. Just would we'll literally keep it in until you remember it.
You're
going to sit here.
I'm sure we'll come back.
Google Colab. Anyone around the world can use Google Colab. Mm-hmm. Now, anyone around the world can use Google Colab.
Keeping it in, but I'm not editing.
and they can get access to TPUs. All right. So you have more. So as long as your child in country X has access to like a school computer or something, they have access to a more powerful processing unit.
Yeah.
Then I can afford to buy.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Like sell a house, I can't afford to buy it sometimes. You know what I mean? So this is great. This is the first stage of the actual democratization. Oh, it's a terrible word, democratization, because you don't mean vote for it, right?
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
The evening of opportunity around the world. You still need that internet access, but look at the rates of how that's increasing.
Exactly. Not many places now that you...
Although there is one problem about most. So it's gone up because most internet's come through B2C, on the phone, not through kind of like infrastructure. So what you can do with that is limited. So that's a lag.
Yeah, that 5G or 6G and kind of beyond like the data speeds... get is great. I remember, and people kind of skip kind of whole kind of generation.
They do.
So you get
the dreadnought all over again.
It's I remember and many years ago. I traveled through South America, and this was kind of like the 2003, something like that. And
it's gap year.
And they'd skipped dial up. You know, they everyone was just straight in with broadband because they just they sort of missed that initial wave. And actually there was more going around internet cafes in South America versus say North America. They were kind of better equipped and really kind of far from remote places. And I think that will happen with lots of this technology, where kids in classrooms now who are learning these technologies, how to approach things or different ways of working, will kind of just sort of leapfrog and not have to go through those different stages of evolution, I suppose, and from a societal point of view.
Good point, because we're obviously all having this conversation now as, moderately successful working professionals. But like I say, it depends how you're looking. Is the glass half empty or half full? And there's a lot of people around the world that are probably looking at this, having a similar conversation, just looking purely at the opportunity element of it, what it's going to mean for them in terms of things that they've never been able to do before.
Could I finish on a personally moving note?
I would be disappointed if you didn't.
So... something I found out recently, there's someone's working with like AI tutors, and it was from a business trying to, mass market videos. It's basically think somewhere in West Africa or somewhere where you have a lower teacher to pupil ratio, loads of pupils, not many teachers. How can we improve education there? Good, it's already good. What they worked out is when they were looking in the research of the interactive stuff, children with SEN, so for example, your autistic children, often have a lot of repetitive movements, which the neurotypical teachers would never pick up. The AI was learning about it, but it was easier. And the autistic children in the study were having so much faster accelerated learning. So where could AI be in the future? It's feasible, but things we think about autistic children now or other, this is not just limited, but anyone, we're thinking it takes X number of years to get from A to B, but we know that they can get to B, but we've been using the wrong, like Alex said, CVs. We do it, but we do it because we do it. Is it the best way?
Yeah.
Teach them because we teach them. Mm. Are neurotypical teachers the best way to educate autistic children, for example? AI might be better because these kids are having, this was unexpected progress.
And again, back to the example with the self-driving cars, where you, pre this sort of technology, if there are new approaches to teaching neurodivergent kids, that would then take, the initial bit of the year's research and studies and go, right, actually, we've cracked it. We've got a great way of new techniques. You've then got to retrain all the teachers in all settings and all countries and all the rest of around the world. Whereas if there's kind of tools and, I hope...
You're not getting rid of the teachers.
You're not getting rid of the teachers.
The teachers are upskilling to use a tech.
They've now got, they've got a better tool, a better way of working. They've got, and again, you go back 10, 15 years where they're using the internet to research rather than the little library in their school that's not had any books for the last kind of 15 years. Now when they're doing research, they're going to the internet, which is obviously kind of completely up to date with all latest information. So this is just another kind of tool in their arsenal that in this particular example would then that tool is being used by all people and getting updated as it learns. And I think again that's probably with the kind of LLMs and the latest kind of wave of technology in this area. It's that self-learning element. I think it's that machine learning that is really machine learning's been around for decades, but now it's the sort of the pace that it can learn and all the context it can draw in, and that you don't need to be quite so specific, I suppose, around exactly what you're teaching it and exactly what the exact parameters that you're expecting.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Well, I don't know about you, gents, but I enjoyed that. Well, that was a good chat. I think AI solved. Check. Next subject, next week. But no, thanks for coming in. And I'm sure we've got lots more chat in us on other topics in future. So if you like this, stay tuned for the next one. But until the next time, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers.